Hi, this is Dr. Mike Chupp, your host of CMDA Matters, the weekly podcast of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. Well, our guest this week joined me on our podcast back in 2021, and we've asked her to join us again today for a couple of reasons. First, because she is co-authoring a new book that I think many of our Christian parents and grandparents at CMDA will be very interested in buying as soon as you hear the title of the book alone. And second, because she's one of our upcoming plenary speakers for the 2023 CMDA National Convention in the Greater Cincinnati area. I wanted her to give us a small preview of what she's going to be sharing with us in late April. So please keep listening for my recent conversation with Mrs. Katie Faust. She's the founder and director of Them Before Us. It's the only organization solely devoted to defending a child's right to their own father and mother. I'm joined today by our CMDA Senior Vice President of Bioethics and Public Policy, Dr. Jeff Barrows. Well, today on CMDA Matters, we have a repeat guest, Katie Faust, and she's the founder and director of the organization Them Before Us. It's the only organization solely devoted to defending a child's right to their own father and mother. She publishes and speaks widely on the rights of children. She's also the Washington State leader for an organization called Canavox and appears in a video series called Dear Katie. She completed her undergraduate degree in political science and Asian studies at St. Olaf College. I think my co-host today knows a little bit about St. Olaf College, don't you, Jeff?
I've been there for 4 years, yes.
Wow. So a couple of alumni here together. And then received a Fulbright scholarship to Taiwan. Her fluency in Mandarin assisted her when she worked with the largest Chinese adoption agency in the world. She's filed 3 amicus briefs supporting children's rights and advocated for the rights of children with lawmakers in the U.S. as well as abroad and in the United Nations. And when Katie was with us, I don't know, it was a year or 18 months ago, I just took a chance and said, hey, in the future, after having heard you share about these issues passionately, would you be a plenary speaker at our national convention someday? And you said yes, and lo and behold, Jeff, we had our first national convention speaker this year.
Yeah, it's worked out very well, and I'm glad to see that she's got a new book out, and it's going to be what we're going to talk about today. So, Katie, as we get started, this book is entitled Raising Conservative Kids in a Woke City, a fascinating title and certainly a very timely topic. So I first want to just get into what motivated you to take the time out of your busy life to write this book along with your co-author, Stacy Manning.
Well, I live in Seattle. Stacy and I both live in Seattle. It does not get any more blue than this city and this state, right? We are in the bluest of the blue places where everywhere around us, you can just assume that people are on the progressive side of the political aisle, and very often aggressively so, whether it's their teachers, sometimes your neighbors, the conversations you're having at park dates. Unfortunately, even a lot of churches, you know, they're not places where you can go and be shielded from this very aggressive woke ideology. And everybody in our city that are Christians or just not insane are asking the same question. Like, they see how devastating and dangerous these ideas are, these woke ideas. And they want to know, like, they understand what they believe, but how do you keep your children from being consumed? How do you protect your children from being infected by this woke virus that very often leads to destruction of the child, of the family, even of the nation? And so that is the question that we're having with all of our friends here. When I get on and do national podcasts or interviews, very often after I'm done talking about children's rights, the question is, but how do we tell our kids? How do we get this to our kids? So that is what the book is about. You know, I've got 2 passions. One is defending the rights of the children of the world in matters of marriage and family. And the other one is making sure that the progressive left cannot touch the minds of my kids. So now I have a book about both.
So, Katie, in the title of your book, Raising Conservative Kids in a Woke City, for our listeners' sake, there are two words there that I think we need to start off with a definition, if you will. One of them is a little bit easier, I think. I've heard some of the podcasts I listen to on a regular basis. One is Reverend Al Mohler, and he says, I just won't use this word woke because it just gets people have different perspectives on it. So tell our listeners what you and your co-author Stacy mean by woke and conservative.
If you look up woke, it sounds very innocuous, right? It's just alert to racial prejudice. Well, congratulations. All of us want to be alert to racial prejudice. Like, there's nothing special about that. And if that was all that woke was about, I'd be like, yeah, I'm woke. That's fine. But we all know that's not what it is, right? What woke really is in its functional definition is viewing everything, every conversation, every interaction, every commercial, right? Every curriculum at school through the lens of group identity, through the lens especially of like racial or sexual identity, right? And then pitting the oppressors and the oppressed against one another based on these group identities. And it has poisoned everything, right? It is not an objective way to view reality. It is a skewed ideology that makes enemies where there should be none. And it weaponizes all of these things that should be places of connection, like your Thanksgiving dinner, right? And it turns them into these battles of who is the guilty and who is the innocent, not based on your own moral decisions. And now we've taken that lens and we've applied it to our national conversation, right? Looking at our nation through this lens of group identity. The title is Raising Conservative Kids in a Woke City, Teaching Economic, Historical, and Biological Reality or Truth in a World of Lies. Because that's what it is. Woke distorts how we view history. Woke distorts how we view the economy, and woke distorts how we view biology. So the antidote to that is conservatism. And I know that that is even a bit of a shift for some people, because many of us kind of grew up, if we're more right-leaning, we had in this idea, like, we just want the government to get out. We just want a small government. But conservatism is more than just government get out. The antidote to woke ideas is conserving the best ideas, conserving the truth about history, conserving the beautiful differences between male and female, conserving economic truths of the free market, which has elevated this country to be a place where there is maximum thriving and human flourishing. So we talk a lot in the book about what are the things that need to be conserved today, and then how do you communicate them to your children in age-appropriate ways?
Well, Katie, in one of your chapters, you talk about the importance of parents being the ones that talk first to their children about various topics. So could you elaborate a little bit on that and talk a little bit to our listeners about how that applies at various educational levels, depending on where their children are at that point in time?
This is so critical. I think the biggest questions that parents have, especially parents with little kids, like elementary school kids, is everybody has the instinct to shelter your children. Just keep that psycho madness garbage out of my kid's face. And that's very human and natural, right? That is the protective instinct, especially of mothers. And it's good, but not to an extreme. And so we do say that in the elementary school years, you should primarily be saturating them in truth and beauty and sheltering them from distorted, damaging, or dangerous ideologies. So that is true for the elementary school years. However, the world is talking to your children about these damaging, distorted, dangerous ideas. And whoever talks to or introduces these concepts to your child first, your child will automatically consider the authority. Mm-hmm. It's something that we've referred to as the founder's principle. Mm-hmm. Whoever talks to the child first, that child will automatically consider to be the expert. So you have to talk to your children first, even in those early years of mostly shielding them from the distortion of woke ideology. You still need to be the person from whom they hear the word pornography first. They need to hear you say the word trans or transgender or bisexual or socialism or abortion. They need to hear it from your lips first. Because then when the world says something to them, when then when they're watching a video in fifth grade and the teacher shows something about how there's all kinds of sexual identities and bisexuality is one of them, the child goes, oh, my mom knows about that. I remember she said, yeah, there's some people that think that you can have a relationship with a boy and a girl, but our bodies are really just made for a relationship with the opposite sex. That's called bisexual. And that just is a rejection of our bodily design, right? So you already have introduced these concepts to your kids very early. And it's hard because this crazy, insane culture is talking to children about inappropriate things way too early, which means we have to get ahead of the ball, which means you're going to have to introduce these concepts to your child before anybody else. And it's going to make you uncomfortable, but it will be much more uncomfortable for you if the first time they even know that pornography exists is when a sixth grader puts their smartphone in their face and shows it to them. And then in the future, your kid thinks that sixth grader is going to have answers when I have questions about it.
Well, Katie, I want our listeners to know that many parents are listening right now and they're going to want your book, you and Stacy's book, and yet it's not coming out till September. So I want you to talk about what for me anyway was one of the chief take-home points to this manuscript that you allowed us to read in advance. And it dovetails so nicely with one of our strategic objectives, in my opinion, at CMDA, which my co-host is superintending, in the area of advocacy that we equip loving messengers of truth. And you call it the no flinch rule. And it's applicable in bringing up kids that are going to honor God, but it's also applicable in us as we deal with a skeptical, agnostic, maybe atheistic, secular world. Tell our listeners about the no flinch rule.
The no flinch rule is critical. I think that it's been important throughout all of parenting history, but it has never been more important than today. And the idea is when your child says something to you that shocks you, that makes you angry, that enrages you, right? That makes your head spin. Like, why is there a kid at the play equipment whose dad just keeps calling him they? Why is that? Why is there a boy running in the track meet against the girls? My teacher came home and said that all Republicans are racist. I mean, like, there are so many things, especially if you are parenting your children in a woke city or a woke culture or a woke country, that is going to make you want to explode. And you can't, right? You need to cultivate what we call the no flinch response, where in your brain, you're thinking, what the H-E-double-L hockey stick are they thinking? It's a third grader. Why can't they just leave them alone? This is way too early for them to be talking about this. Oh, yeah. That's my face. I'm going to march right over to that school. That's what your brain is saying. Okay. But your face needs to say, oh, tell me more about that. Oh, where did you hear that? Oh, how did you feel about that? And here's the reason why. Because you will not be able to properly instill your convictions into your children if they have to wade through a massive emotional response to get the answers and connection that they need. And so if your daughter, your fourth grader, comes home to you and says, my friend Annie has a crush on me and she says that we can be girlfriends, okay? Your daughter probably doesn't know what she thinks and she's probably a little confused and disoriented by that statement. She needs you to contextualize and give her connection and to give her answers about how to think about this thing that is troubling her. But if there is a barrier between your good response and connection and her question, you are going to train her to ask somebody else in the future. And that is the no-go zone for parents. You have to maximize connection. You have to maximize communication. And if your kids know that you're going to explode and rage every single time they bring something up that makes you uncomfortable, they will ask the internet instead. And that is not what you want.
Such an important point. Thank you, Katie, for that. And as Mike has already said, our listeners, many of them are parents and are going to be very, very interested in this book, but the vast majority are also healthcare professionals. And while they're going to be maybe parents themselves, they'll also be dealing with parents in the office. And so in a short period of time, as they begin interacting with parents, dealing with kids that are facing this woke generation, what are two or three things that you would advise them to try and keep in mind to tell these parents?
Well, I think it's helpful to think about child development, training them to confront some of these ideas in three different stages, right? So here's kind of this big overview of tailored age-appropriate advice for parents with different stages of child development. So in general, what we talk about in elementary school, and this aligns with this classical model of education called the trivium, which a lot of you guys are going to be familiar with, I'm sure, the grammar, logic, and rhetoric phase of learning, right? Which is really different ways that the brain processes as it grows. So the grammar phase of child development is really all through elementary school. And at that age, kids are wired to absorb. They are wired to memorize. That is why in classical education, you've got kids memorizing times tables, memorizing grammar, memorizing songs that have truths about science and biology and all of that. Kids are not critically thinking at that age. They are going to absorb whatever, especially a trusted and beloved adult tells them. So your main job in elementary school is to maximize their exposure to truth and beauty because they will digest it wholesale without questioning it. So that does mean you need to filter out distorted worldviews, and you need to filter out as much as possible adults who are seeking to evangelize them into a distorted worldview. But then something changes in middle school, and we've all seen it happen with our kids who are 10, 11, 12, where they go, wait a second. How do you know Jesus is the only way to heaven? Wait a second. What if the earth wasn't just created by God? What if it was the Big Bang or whatever? Kids start to suddenly question the things that you have taught them. And a lot of times parents will freak out at this stage and think, oh, they're rejecting their faith. No, that is where you go, ooh, my kid is ready for more. Hmm. So that is the stage in middle school where our recommendation is that you, the parent, need to introduce to them damaging and distorted woke views. You need to make them experts on abortion. You need to talk about homosexuality and same-sex attraction. You need to discuss transgenderism and the surgeries that go along with that. You need to tell them of the false narratives that have to do with American history. You need to read biographies of socialists, people that have escaped socialist states, so that they can understand what socialism does, right? So in middle school, that is prime teaching time, but not truth and beauty as much, which you did in elementary school, but middle school is you're going to introduce them to the opposing views of what they learned in elementary school. And here's the kicker. And this is the thing that I think a lot of parents don't expect. By the time your kids are in high school, you're done. You are done. Don't even think that you can start the saturating them in truth and beauty or introducing them to woke concepts when they're in high school. At that point, you should be all done. All of the major teaching and training happens before they are about 14 years old. And then your job in high school is to stay connected. That is the main emphasis of what you need to be as a parent. Stay connected. And if you've done a good job with elementary school and middle school, just sit back and watch them take on the world themselves.
Katie, today parents are so busy, and our listeners, healthcare professionals, they lead busy lives. I've heard our vice president of campus ministry say busy, the acronym is being under Satan's yoke. And reading your book, it was a little bit exhausting to me, the amount of investment that's required. And you just said it's got to be before high school. How would you respond to the parents who would say, I just don't have that much time, Katie, to invest in this kind of preparation that you're asking us to do? How can we possibly do this?
Well, it is a lifestyle, you know. And I guess, a lot of our recommendations in the chapter on how you yourself need to become an expert and saturating them in truth and beauty in elementary school is you're just listening to podcasts together. You're pulling them into the things that you're already doing. You're reading an article about the biological differences between male and female. You just invite them to come in and be like, hey, read this paragraph with me. So hopefully you're not going to be doing too much different, especially in elementary school. You yourself are taking in truth and beauty in the world, and you invite your child into that, right? And we actually have a whole chapter about how this slow handoff takes place. A bunch of the truth and beauty stages is just them watching you be saturated in truth and beauty. And then the next step is they help you be saturated in truth and beauty. And then you help them be saturated in truth and beauty. And then you watch them be saturated in truth and beauty. So there is a slow handoff that we sort of detail about how to do that, that really just has to do with inviting your child into how you are living when it comes to confronting these different issues. But yes, it is a time investment. and you have a choice. Either you invest the time or the woke is going to capture your child and poison them. This is the battle that parents are facing today. I think in the past we had to figure out, like, how do I get them to hockey practice and do blah, 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 blah. Times have changed. Your child's mind, body, and heart are literally on the line here. It is their soul that you are forming and battling for. So if you are birthing children, your choice is raise them yourself or let the woke culture raise them. And this is a book about how you raise them yourself.
You know, Katie, what about the listener who says, Katie, I understand you're in Seattle, you're out there in the extremely liberal Northwest, but I'm from small town Midwest, and my kids, we're not behind enemy lines like you are. How would you respond to that?
Yeah, well, your kids are, you know, still have friends with pronouns in their bio, and they are still thumbing through TikTok, which is spewing forth all kinds of gender ideology. If you are not giving your child a robust apologetic on the things that they should be for, I promise you the world is going to talk to them about what they should be against. And what the world is going to tell them they should be against is you. You, the parent, you, your worldview, you, your church. And so you do need to be very serious. And we talk a little bit about the fallout of extreme sheltering, which I don't think that if you're living in a red state or homeschooling, I don't think that's extreme sheltering. But extreme sheltering will not strong children make. There does need to be a level of worldview resistance so they understand what they do believe, right? It's helpful to understand what you do believe when you see very clearly, oh, that is the opposite. So even these opportunities to introduce your children to these distortions of the world, it will fortify them.
Well, Katie, my youngest child is 35 years old, so I am very thankful that I didn't have to raise our kids during the era of smartphones and social media. But I know this is a major issue now for parents. So can you go into that topic a little bit and what your recommendations are with kids, again, the various educational levels, and how to handle this whole social media world for them?
We talk about it. We have an entire section on phones in chapter 2, where we're talking about, like, how should you approach this technology? And the answer is, up until about age 6, no. And not just phones, screens. Like, screens should not be a part of your child's life up until age 6. And I quote in there Foster Klein, who wrote Parenting with Love and Logic. And he, well, I had the fortune and misfortune of parenting my first child in front of him, you know, probably one of the greatest parenting experts of the last century. And he told me the main problem with screens when children are young is not necessarily the illicit content. It is that that is the industrious stage for children. That is when they learn to produce. That is when they learn to innovate in their world. And when a screen is in front of them, watch them. They shut down. They're not producing, they're consuming. And if you miss that industrious window of ages 2 to 6, you will lose the ability for kids to learn to entertain themselves wherever they go. And that will doom you to a life of, I'm bored, mom, mom, I'm bored, mom, 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 right? They will be reliant on other things to create and to innovate. And so there should just be hardly any screens in your child's life up to age 6, period, period. Then when it comes to phones, we recommend not at all in elementary school. You don't need it, right? And then in middle school, if you choose to give your child a phone, it should not have any social media on it and very little internet at all, like GPS, texting capabilities, that's it. And then we talk about how a lot of parents think the internet is the big danger to kids once they do have a phone or once they do have computer access. No. A lot of the resources that we recommend to parents, probably some of you guys listening to this podcast right now are doing it online. So online is not the enemy. For children, for teens, social media is the enemy. So that's a real distinction you need to start making. It's fine to use online resources, especially when computers are in a central place. Kids aren't going to sleep in their bedroom with the phones. They're all being charged overnight in the dining room or whatever it is, right? It's social media that you really need to be careful about. So then we tell them, whenever you do decide to give your child a phone, you need to train them to use the phone. And we go through the discipleship model that we explain in chapter 5, the slow handoff. I do, you watch. I do, you help. You do, I help. You do, I watch. You, that is the discipleship model for teaching your child anything, whether it's following Christ, doing laundry, learning a conservative worldview, or using a smartphone. Your child needs to first watch you use your phone responsibly, not binging, not on it all the time, posting appropriate pictures, deciding how to engage with integrity when you're in a Facebook conversation. Then they help you do it. Hey, honey, I'm going to choose which picture that I put on social media. Which one should I choose? Yeah, I don't think the bikini picture of me on the back porch is a good idea. Let's look for something where we're all wearing, where there's more coverage of us at the beach or whatever it is. Hey, honey, I'm going to post this comment. Do you want to proofread it for me? What do you think I should add? And then when you do give them an account when they're, or a phone when they're a ninth grader or a 10th grader or whatever, you are on all of their accounts with them. You are approving what it is that they are posting. And then finally, when they are juniors or seniors, you should be able to sit back and watch them use a phone responsibly. So we give a lot of guidance in there. I don't think that there's a hard and fast rule, like before this age, never, after this age, always. I think it has to do with being very mindful of their developmental needs, their specific temptations related to their personalities. And above all, don't just hand them a phone. Train them on how to use it.
You're going to be our plenary speaker at the national convention here at the end of April in Cincinnati. And can you just give us a quick peek of thought about what you plan on focusing on there in the Northern Kentucky Convention Center?
Well, the theme that runs through both of these books is don't touch the kids. That's the common thread between them too. You know, when it comes to my own children as a parent, we are in the world. You don't scare me. Like you and your ideology, you don't scare me. You're not going to touch my kid. I have made sure that you cannot get to their heart and mind. And my kids will call you out. They can spot a lie. They can push back when needed. The common thread with my nonprofit is don't touch the kids. Don't touch the kids. I understand that adults are struggling with all kinds of things when it comes to matters of marriage and family. We need to resolve. We can have compassion and empathy, but the way you resolve that struggle cannot be to force a child to sacrifice for you. So what I'm going to be talking about at the convention is matters of reproductive technologies. How is what we are doing in the world of sperm donation, egg donation, IVF, and surrogacy, how is that forcing children to pay the price for something that adults want? And the overall takeaway is going to be, I am so sorry. Let's see how we can resolve your underlying issues, but don't touch the kids. Your solution to your desire for marriage and family or fertility or parenthood cannot force a child to lose their fundamental right to life or right to their mother and father so you can have what you want.
Well, if you want to hear that live directly from Katie Faust, get on our website at cmda.org, events, and sign up for our national convention April 27th through the 30th. Katie, any final thoughts about your upcoming book or opportunity to share with our members in a few months?
You should all come to the conference. Like, I follow these guys, and they only do great content. So if you're in the area, you should come. I mean, even if you're not a medical professional, I just think this kind of stuff is fascinating. I'm looking forward to learning a lot. So I just think subscribe, listen to these guys' podcasts. Do you understand, like, when I am out in the world and I'm talking to different people about how upside down things are, and I'm like, well, people will say, well, where can I get good information? Very often CMDA is the answer. Wow. There are very few other organizations, especially medical organizations, that are not bending the knee to the woke gods. And these guys refuse. They bend the knee to Christ alone. And those are the kind of people and voices you need to be following. So I say, come to the convention.
Thank you for that endorsement.
Yeah,
Katie.
Thank you for that endorsement, Katie. God bless you and your co-author, Stacy, as you work toward a publishing date sometime in September for your book, Raising Conservative Kids in a Woke City, there in Seattle, and as we've heard, far beyond across this country and the world. God bless you and them before us.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Well, I hope that spending those few minutes that you got to hear from Katie got you as excited as I did about our upcoming national convention. If you haven't registered yet, I encourage you to register now and reserve your spot. Here's Jamie with some more information for you about the convention and how you might register even today.
Here at CMDA, we hope you're planning on joining us at the 2023 CMDA National Convention in the Cincinnati, Ohio area on April 27th through 30th. This is the place to find resilience in your life, your faith, and your practice. Our speakers include Jerome Adams, former U.S. Surgeon General, Dr. Daryl Bach from Dallas Theological Seminary, physician turned author, Dr. Katie Butler, and many more. And last year, we sold out, so don't wait to register for this year. There is such value and support in joining together with your CMDA family at the convention each year. For more information and to register, visit natcon.cmda.org.
Katie's new book that we talked about is entitled Raising Conservative Kids in a Woke City. It won't be available until September, but I want to encourage you to learn more about these topics we've been discussing with her in this week's interview. Check out the website for her organization called Them Before Us at the site thembeforeus.com. You can also find a copy of her first book, which is entitled Them Before Us, Why We Need a Global Children's Rights Movement. It's on that same website, or you can find it on Amazon. We've also included a link for you in our show notes today. I really enjoyed how passionate Katie is about these various issues, and I think her challenge is spot on that we must be introducing our kids to these concepts from a biblical worldview before our society and our culture have a chance to do so and possibly lead them astray. Her passion also reminded me that this interview and this topic is important, not just for healthcare professionals who are parents, but it's a powerful admonition for all parents who follow Christ in our country. That means, friends, that this is a great opportunity to share the CMDA Matters podcast, as well as our CMDA ministry, with your friends and neighbors who aren't in the healthcare profession. Would you consider sharing this episode with a friend or neighbor even this week? Plus, you can consider sharing it with a healthcare colleague. And at the same time, you can give your partner or colleague a gift membership to CMDA. If you have experienced firsthand the impact that CMDA can have on you and your ability to find connection in healthcare, why keep that to yourself? And I hope that you've discovered the benefit of all the resources available to our members. I think that your personal face-to-face invitation to become a member of CMDA, well, it's going to be much more effective than any email or promotion that we here in Bristol might send to your friends. You can find more information about our ever-expanding member benefits and how to give a gift membership at cmda.org/join. If you're looking for resources to help you dig deeper into some of these cultural issues we talked about with Katie today, like transgender identity or abortion, physician-assisted suicide, and many others, I've got a couple to recommend to you. First, I'd like you to check out our CMDA ethics statements. These statements are designed to provide you with biblical, ethical, social, and scientific understanding of a variety of bioethical issues through concise statements that have been articulated in a compassionate and caring manner. CMDA's Ethics Committee spends countless hours researching and crafting these statements because we place so much value on providing these as resources for our members. Included in the long list of statements are statements specifically addressing transgender identification, homosexuality, conscience rights, and many more. These statements are available. You can find them by going to cmda.org/ethics. Another resource is a small group study that we have created called Bridging the Gap. Here's Jamie with some additional information for you about that course.
As Christians, we are called to speak truth into ethical issues and courageously stand up for what's morally right according to our beliefs. But in order to engage others in these discussions with grace and kindness, First, we need to arm ourselves with knowledge and understanding of each of these topics. Bridging the Gap, where medical science and church meet, is a small group study developed by expert healthcare professionals. The curriculum is designed to ask difficult, thought-provoking questions as we seek the truth found in God's Word about the ethical issues facing Christians today. Topics include addictions, beginning of life, end of life, gender identity, right of conscience, and sexuality. For more information and to download this free curriculum, visit cmda.org/bridgingthegap.
There is still time to register for our upcoming webinar with the Hendricks Center at Dallas Theological Seminary. It'll be this Saturday, February 4th at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. We're calling it Critical Conversations on Pregnancy After Roe. This webinar is designed to help explore the daunting task that we as healthcare professionals and also pastoral care professionals face amid discussions about complicated pregnancies in a post-Roe America. How do we speak effectively, truthfully, and graciously while giving meaningful care in such an environment? Join us for this critical conversation as we consider the theological, the medical, legal, and pastoral perspectives required to serve our patients well. The webinar is free to CMDA members, so register now by going to cmda.org/events. As I look to next week, I want to invite you to join me next Thursday to hear from our 2022 Educator of the Year on this program. It'll be Dr. Farr Kirlin, who's author of the book, The Way of Medicine. He's a professor at Duke University. Dr. Kirlin gave the keynote address recently for a very special event at the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C. That event was hosted by our CMDA board, and we celebrated the launch of the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine. You don't want to miss that keynote. Remember, if you'd like to suggest a future guest for the podcast, you can email us at cmdamatters@cmda.org. And if you like our podcast, please be sure to give us a 5-star rating and share us on your favorite social media platform. Before I close, I thought this comment from one of our CMDA student members, well, it's relevant to our conversation today. This student said, CMDA is willing to talk about all the controversial issues while speaking truth. And I think that a lot of people are looking for that nowadays. I'm thankful for our CMDA members who are willing to speak truth. And I'm thankful for Katie, for her organization, Them Before Us, and other like-minded organizations that are joining us in this pursuit and a journey of speaking truth in the midst of a culture that is trying to take our children further and further away from the truth found in God's Word. Let's continue, friends, speaking truth to our children, to our communities, and to our patients as we bring the hope and healing of Christ to our world today. That's what matters to CMDA, and CMDA matters. God willing, we'll get to see you next week right here on CMDA Matters.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.